Recording started.
Welcome to the first week's review for the Learning Analytics and Knowledge Opener course. If you haven't attended these sessions before, basically these are quite informal. It's more a casual review discussion. Sometimes when Dave leads the session, it's a whiteboard free-for-all with idea sharing and information. Other times it's a little more broadcast, and sometimes it's a general reflection. What's working in the course? What's not working in the course? All of those kinds of questions. So just be aware, we don't have a particular agenda. Really, you as the individuals in the course sort of drive and define the agenda. So before I get started, I guess any facilitators or anyone else that want to grab the mic, let's just start with a question of how'd week one go for you?
I don't mind grabbing the mic. This is Dave Cormier here. I'm ostensibly a facilitator. I think of myself as a pseudo-facilitator on this topic. But I thought, just to speak, I think George has done a really great job putting this course together. I'd never say it to his face, but I found that week one was a really nice introductory week. I found that while I wasn't able to go to the presentation live, I found the recording really useful. I found it really sort of sketched out at least the perceptions of the field from one person's position. I got the sense really early on that this is a really newly developing field and that there are still a lot of things out there for negotiation. And I found the readings gave me a bit of that. I particularly liked Tanya's article. And I found that really useful in giving me the historical piece. And Hunch, like many people, I didn't think it worked very well, but I did a nice job illustrating some of the possibilities. And of course, it brings me back to Amazon. It reminds me of the stuff that they do there. So for me, week one was really great. I really enjoyed it. And I'm looking forward to maybe a little bit more struggle and a little bit more challenge in week two. But I thought week one was nicely paced to give me a chance to dig in.
Great. Thanks, Dave, for the comments there. I see we've got a few others just popping into the room now. We're just doing a review. How's the week one going for you? What was the pace, the content, all those things? So again, it's an open mic, or if you don't have a microphone, just drop a few comments in the chat area. We'll take about 5 or 10 minutes just to do a quick review, and then I'll do a run through of some of the things that I noticed, and then we'll start looking at, you know, sort of concerns or things that we want to particularly solve or address over the coming weeks. Yeah, getting to the point, plug 103. It is a lot to get your head around, and one of the difficulties here with why it's complex is really we're pulling together different fields, and I have a semi-completed post on this, but you know, what does a data analysis or a learning analytics team look like in an organization, and what kinds of participants should be present? You know, you can't just bring in an educator or, you know, someone with a psychological, learning orientation or a background in learning psychology. You really bring in specialized skill sets. You're going to have your statisticians. You're going to have people who are, more based in information science or analytics from a data mining perspective. You're going to have people who are defining what kinds of questions are you asking. So I think there's as we go forward, I hope we can sort of clarify that a little bit more and recognize that some of you may feel a bit lost now saying, my word, there's a lot of stuff happening. But I want to emphasize the neat stuff is in the connections and in the integration points. So recognizing that, you know, you aren't going to be a full expert in this entire domain. That's why we have a variety of guest speakers that are coming at it, presenting a particular nuanced perspective. But recognizing it's connecting these elements that actually gives it some value overall. I'm just looking who else is here. I think Tanya's here. If you have a mic, feel free to grab it. Reflections week one. John, great to see you here as well. Feel free to grab a mic if you'd like. All right, well, rather than spending time sort of poking through this, trying to force people to speak, I'll just do a quick run through of some things that I found to be of interest in the course, and then maybe that'll give us some, grist for the mill to chat about. So this is how I sort of profiled week one course. I looked at several areas, and I'll split each of these. You won't be able to read this slide, by the way. This is just basically a look at the map as a whole, and I'll sort of poke at each individual piece. But in week one, I want to address a few things. One is the content. the format, the process, things that we need to track as we go forward, and this is something Francisco mentioned right at the start, and also some concerns that have arisen as we're going forward. So if you're okay with this, I'm going to, and at any point, interrupt and say, my goodness, you're boring us, George. Please talk about something else, and we can change direction. So in terms of content, first of all, we had four articles, actually, that were significant. Dave already mentioned Tanya's article. Tanya's article did a nice job reviewing some of the additional readings in the background of this, so I haven't sort of explicated that in more detail here. But the ones that I want to look at are the articles that Goldstein presented, and also the Baker article, and also looking at, I'm just drawing a blank here, the third article, which was, again, a bit of a meta-review of what's happened in the field. So Goldstein basically presents this notion of academic analytics, and his term, more or less, and he was quoted, John Fritz actually quoted him a fair bit as well in his presentation, his sort of five-stage model of analytics use in academic environments. But basically, the way Goldstein defines it, it's really this intersection point, and we'll come across this again and again in the course, where we're intersecting and connecting different elements. So he looks at it as intersection between technology, information, management, and applying this in order to manage academic enterprise. There's a variety of things that this comes into in terms of citations, analyzing citations to determine organization performance. Actually, just this morning I was in a Thomson Reuters workshop where they were looking at Insight, which is an academic analytics tool. And in some regards, it's a little frightening because it normalizes each academic to sort of a concept within a discipline, and then every paper is evaluated within a department or faculty or university to determine whether it is receives above average influence or impact in the discipline. So essentially, academics are analyzed and reduced to some kind of a data structure so you can tell exactly who contributes, who doesn't, and what's the value of their impact, and of course aggregated this leads to the broad institution level. So you're going to see a big uproar, I think, academics having issues with this. Anyway, so there's academic analytics, a variety of things that look at ranking and rating, which is all the rage these days. Now, one of the articles that probably I think is the most helpful for the concept of analytics was Ryan Baker's article, and Baker actually is going to be here next week doing a presentation, so he'll get into it in more detail. He's one of the leaders in the educational data mining community, and he basically looks at educational data mining as, and this is his quote, the discovery of novel and potentially useful information from large amounts of data. And he has a variety of approaches that he uses, techniques. We start at the bottom, it's clustering, relationship mining, prediction, and those are basically what you would expect. I mean, you're really, it's statistical analysis to a large degree, and this is where you're using tools like R or SPSS or other statistical tools. But he has two additional ones that he adds that sort of move it beyond the scope of a traditional data mining model, and one is distillation. Namely, reducing it so we can make decisions with data. This is a big challenge because it fits in the scope of data-driven decision-making. And it's a lot of rage right now, but I'm a bit concerned it's eventually going to be reduced into this quality management process that we had in the 80s and 90s, and in the end it just gets mocked and ridiculed because it forces a system to do something that it just can't do. You know, we can't reduce the act of decision-making to strictly data analysis. And then the fifth one is the notion of discovery with models. We'll revisit this a little bit as we go forward in the course. I'm going to pause there for a bit just to see if there's any questions, comments, or reactions, and whether you want me to keep going or whether you want to move into a more casual discussion. All right, so that was as I mentioned, that was the Baker article, and this is going to basically emphasize some of the elements of data mining and what is involved with it. That's really where we want to get. This week is a foundational week trying to address some of the concerns that we face, but really we want to get to the... All right, well, that was interesting. Apparently TELUS still sucks, so I'm going to continue going here, and hopefully we won't have too many interruptions in the session. But anyway, so as I was stating, the point of data mining is not just looking at the patterns that individual participants display in their activity. You want to move beyond that. And you want to look at the language, the structures that are produced by learners. So, you know, logging, how often does someone enter a course, how long do they stay, which sites do they look at. Those can be helpful activities to track, but there's a lot more that goes on in the learning process that can't be captured just simply by looking at the activity of learners. If we want to get to, I guess, what I would call more advanced analytics, we have to do a better job of tracking the activity of individuals within a particular mode of interaction and engagement with knowledge and knowledge artifacts. Actually, the data shop that we'll encounter next week when Ryan presents gets into this a little bit more, this notion of knowledge elements being discoverable through some level of analysis with individuals. So, again, just want to emphasize that's what the Ventura article did fairly well, is introducing alternative data mining models that went a little bit beyond what we had done so far. The other element that we wanted to look at, so those are basically the three articles, but the other element we want to look at is a bit of a response in terms of what did you think about the course in terms of the format? And this is something probably a little more difficult for people to wrap their head around if you're new to this. And on some levels, I'm hoping you found the opportunity to engage in this format at least somewhat satisfying, and it didn't end up drawing away from the experience of the course as a whole. So I'll release it there. I mean, we had discussions in a variety of spaces. You know, the Moodle forums, it was distributed in blogs, and we were sharing information via NetVibes and daily emails. And, you know, a lot of the discussion did focus on Moodle, but out of 610 people, I think, that we have registered, we only have about 250 that are in Moodle, so obviously there's a good portion of people that aren't active in that space. So I just want a quick reaction or comment from anyone. What did you think of the format or that approach to the course?
Hi, George. Well, if nobody talks, I think the format is quite good. It is the first MOOC that I'm participating in. And the readings were okay. All the emails we received, I do think that some of them are so private or are only saying, hi, good to see you there. So I really like the format. I can go through all the emails, but sometimes I feel that some emails should really be peer-to-peer and not posted in the forum.
So a few questions. Mary, NetVibes takes absolutely no time at all. It's a few minutes getting it done. Getting to Francisco's comment, I think Sylvia did put together a tutorial. I'm not sure, Sylvia, if you want to drop it into the text forum, which allows individuals to decide which forums to engage in. The opportunity, I guess, in that regard, the introductory forums where we had about 200 and some posts, those are the ones that are typically going to be focused on, hey, oh, great to see you here, I'm from here, you know, this is where the organization I represent. You're going to see that as a more personal space. I found that the discussions that have occurred in week one, in contrast, once we got into the regular Moodle forum, I found those discussions actually were much less sort of, you know, this personal connected nature of discussion and much more focused on people interacting with each other around ideas. So, I mean, that was my take at least. But as Sylvia noted, that's very difficult to control who discusses and what kind of information is shared, because we want individuals to sort of find their own legs in the space. And, you know, definitely there are opportunities to filter either through email or through what you subscribe to in Moodle if you want to minimize some of those things that you might find a little frustrating. All right, well, then I'm going to move on with a few additional points here, and then we can perhaps focus on some chats after. Again, so first of all, the process. I think this is one of the more challenging aspects of the course, is getting a sense of how do we connect the contributions or the concepts that individuals are sharing with each other, and how do we sort of foster an emotional experience that isn't overwhelming. I mean, there should naturally be some tension in learning. My own view, at least, is that learning is really that act of trying to make sense of chaos. And so to a degree, there is an expectation of some frustrating components in the course. But it's this connecting of concepts that's particularly challenging. And you know, when you try to pull these things together through discussions, I use a tool called View, the visual understanding environment, concept maps, you can use CMAP as well, but really that's an opportunity for participants to say, I'm getting all these messages from all these sources, can I start to categorize and group these in some way that helps me to better understand what's happening in the course? So I certainly encourage you to consider that if you're finding that, you know, you're feeling a little overwhelmed and having difficulty tying these ideas together. But it does raise, you know, another critical element that makes this difficult is we haven't gotten down to the practical basics yet. Good point, John. To a degree, there's a good opportunity for whether you're manually trying to create the conceptual maps in a course or whether, as we look at next week when we play with Snap, where you're trying to understand social networks, it's a good opportunity for you to use the fragmented nature of the course as a means to practice, I guess, personal analytics is a great term. But there's a few things that perhaps make it a little bit difficult at this stage, which is that we haven't gotten down to a lot of practical implementations yet. We will be, however, you know, a few things coming up. We do have some data sets that we'll play with Jeffy, and actually just yesterday, Terry Anderson from, he's a colleague of John and I's at the Technology Enhanced Knowledge Research Institute, gave me a listing, a CD of 10 years of ROTL, which is the International Review of Research in Open and Distance Learning. I'll zip that and throw it up online, and we'll use that as a file for playing around and using different tools so that we can not just look at structured data, web server data, but we can also start to play with text data and some of the tools that allow you to understand some of those elements. In particular, I'd love to see, let's say, a citation analysis of the articles. I mean, what's been linked, what's been popular. So these are the opportunities that we will get practical with tools and actual data sets. And some of the methods as well. So, you know, bear with us a little bit while we move through some of the theory components initially and then eventually get down to really practical illustrations for you as participants to engage in. Now, here's a variety of concerns that probably covered. I mean, you're feeling lost. Relevance is a big one as well. We had, you know, one individual tweeted and said, you know, I'd like to see more of a corporate focus. And my take on a course, you know, when you have 600 people in a course or more, there's going to be some area of overlap. So that means if you feel something is missing, start it. Create a forum, initiate, interact, discuss. You know, put your stake in the ground, and that'll draw people who are in a similar point. There are people who are likely dealing with similar concerns, you know, whether it's organizational structure, corporate, higher ed. So take advantage of the number of people here and, you know, form and create relevant discussions that you'd like to engage in. The amount of time required was a big one, I think, as well. I had a few people actually that emailed me and said, you know, I didn't think it'd be this hectic, you know, these daily emails and everything. My advice is, you know, unsubscribe from the Google group if you're feeling a bit overwhelmed. You know, filter out your emails. You just attend the live sessions if you want. There's a lot more going on in this course than any one individual needs to get a hold of. So, you know, practice personal information management techniques and, you know, make the course do for you what you want it to do based on the context that you're currently in. A few things that came up significantly, though, and I just want to highlight these. Initially, I thought I would do an entire week on ethics and privacy, but as we've discovered in week one already, we're talking about this now, and it's just a concern that naturally comes up. And if you think week one you found a few elements irritating, wait till we get into some of the readings next week where we start to look at insurance companies that mine social networks in order to decide who to send an offer to based on their lifestyles. And if somebody watches too much TV and eats too many potato chips, they feel they're at risk and they're using statistical techniques to determine who they should send information to based on a combination of publicly available data, such as social networks and purchase data, such as you can get from data warehouses. So there's some neat stuff there to think about, but we'll definitely tackle ethics and privacy in more detail as the course progresses. Final slide for me, and then I'll throw it back to you for anybody who'd like to then move in any discussions that you find to be of interest. First of all, there's a variety of ways of looking at analytics, and there's a variety of stages of looking at analytics. You saw the one, the Goldstein model that John Fritz presented in his session earlier this week. Basically, it's a matter of how, you know, that's a model of how do institutions use data. We'll also look at a model that Hillary Mason presents, and actually, I think we see a lecture from her next week. Which looks at stages of data, you know, from finding data, scrubbing data, determining what to do with it. But, you know, we'll tackle that as we go, but that relates to the process of data and data cleansing and analytics. I want to talk about specific focal points of analytics and who benefits from this. If you're at my EDUCAUSE session on Monday, this is the slide that I presented at the end. But as an educator who's teaching at a class level, you're likely interested in course-level analytics, whether it's social networks, conceptual analysis. Maybe you're using cognitive tutors, automated tutors that you can track interactions from students. This and this level of language analysis, this mainly benefits you as a staff or faculty member and perhaps the learner. Once you start to aggregate this data, though, across multiple courses, then you begin, you get the benefits of larger data. Amount, and that allows you to start to do some work with predictive models and starting to isolate patterns that, you know, indicate failure or success. The third dimension of analytics is institutional, and most universities, I'm going to say all universities, have some department that's devoted to institutional statistics, where you're tracking where learners are coming from. You might also be tracking, you know, performance of academics. There may be, to some degree, also an analysis of how information flows within an organization, you know, who's, from an administrative perspective, you know, who's talking to whom about what and to what effect, sort of Lazarus quote. So this is where the institution begins to know itself and begins to know its students. Regional levels, this is where you move up to a state level and also to national and international level. These levels of analytics are primarily geared for funders and administrators, and this is where you start to look at, I mentioned Thomson Reuters Insight, but you know, this is where you start to look at what are academics doing and what's the impact of what academics are doing. You know, for example, here is an interesting thing called the Open Education, or the Open Researcher and Contributor ID, which is sort of like Open ID for educators, which is has a, you know, an intent of trying to give individual a particular structure or ID as a whole. So this is where you start to compare universities, you begin to compare academics, you begin to compare departments within different institutions, and the whole intent is to grow in your awareness of what's happening. And this is quite disorienting for academics in particular. I mean, most of us think our work has more to it than simply tracking, you know, articles cited and, you know, the impact that we had, let's say, by data metrics. We think there's really softer elements or components to the process, and that's true. But analytics sometimes reduce or ignore a lot of those things. So that's my very rough, quick take on week one. Let's throw it out to questions and comments about what I said or anything.
Can you hear me? Yeah, I'm curious about this course. You've got a lot here in this slide, and I'm not really sure the newness of this type of data analysis. I guess I'm learning a little bit in this course that it's sort of evolving. There's the traditional ways to analyze or collect and analyze student performance data and institutional data. But am I getting it right that we may be able to start crossing boundaries here? We may be able to be putting institutional data together with course level to see the total student experience?
A few things on this, Kelly. First of all, the need for us to recognize that this, no, this isn't new. I mean, personalized learning has long been a goal of academics, and John, who's in here as well, he has his background's in computer science, and so he can definitely talk about early hypermedia, adaptive media activities, as well as, you know, cognitive tutors and tutor agents. So in that regard, you know, you're right. A lot of these things aren't new. What is getting to be newer is that we're living more of our lives in digital spaces. We're living a greater portion of our, you know, more of our data is captured, our purchases through debit cards and credit cards, when we check in through Foursquare, when we interact online. So that's the one thing that's happening. We're producing a far greater quantity of data, and it's in a digital form, which means it can be analyzed. Marissa Mayer, one of the lectures we'll look at, I think next week as well, she talks about what's changed that allows for greater analysis of data, and she looks at it in terms of speed, in terms of scale, and in terms of computation power. So that's just a background. I mean, a lot of these concepts are not new. What's interestingly new is the fact that we can bring these elements together, and what I mean by that is our silos of data that we have in different parts of our lives can now be connected. And there's issues, big ethical issues with it. But, and this is what the Deloitte article of insurers comes out next week, where we look at how an insurance company takes public data, the data that you purchase, I should say, from you know, data miners or data collectors, and the data that's available online. And when you bring these elements together, you gain a more complete understanding. Now, I've used a term called ICLAM, to steal from Apple, but Integrated Knowledge and Learning Analytics Model. And my argument there is when we take data of students online and we take the data of students in a classroom, you know, perhaps how they're interacting with one another, maybe we need a Kinect, you know, camera, Microsoft Kinect camera up front to capture gestures, what's the social network that's being formed, how many people are using different university services such as libraries and other things. That's where you start to get novel insights and more complete insight in terms of what learners are doing. You also start to encounter, as I stated, ethics and security issues. Absolutely, Nancy. And that's one of the things that in the Marissa Mayer, she's one of the head people in Google, and she gave a nice talk where she's looking at what's changed with data and why are we able to do so much more with data, and that's one of our activities next week. But she really does a nice job detailing how increase in processing speed, different scale, the digitization of data, I mean, all of these things are influencing to creating the learning, well, in our case, the learning analytics environment, but definitely the big data world that seems to be emerging. Well, there's your answer. Tony, there are big challenges with it. I was reading this past week on there's an attempt for some organizations that are trying to basically increase the way in which data is evaluated and understood. So, for example, doctors might not be able to access or share their data with pharmaceutical companies to the same level because of the obvious privacy issues that arise around sharing data with others. But we're still largely, I think it's reasonably fair to say, at an early stage in some of this approach of data analysis. But you know, if the data is online, you don't know what other people will do with it. And so, you know, we might say, well, you know, this is ethical use of data, but let's face it, we're living such a large portion of our activities in a public sphere now, you know, as this course indicates, that anyone can come by, and I think without too much effort, I mean, I think this is a reality, without too much effort, we should be able to get a decent sense of people in the course, you know, what they've posted, their blogs, their other activities. You may recall one article I threw in the readings this past week, in the daily emails, I should say, and it concluded with an interesting comment. The author stated that, you know, access to data isn't the problem, but access to the algorithms to analyze the data, that is the key area of concern in the future. So that's the value point. Data is abundant, but understanding what that data means and making sense of it, that's really where you apply the level of intelligence to actually make it mean something. By the way, just again, I do want to emphasize, if anyone wants to grab the mic, it is wide open. It makes for a far more entertaining recording for others, if it's more than my voice. Francisco, you know, I think I would state that we don't have a particular focus. We're looking really at learning analytics, which can go at various levels. Certainly the course level, I think, is more relevant for most of us simply because most of us are involved in settings where the our interaction with each other is at that level. Like, we're interacting with students and with other academics. If you had, let's say, a group of VPs involved, well, they're going to have more of a systemic approach, and that's definitely going to be the big change. So based on who we are in this course, that we define our own area of interest, but you may find that, that there are others who are more interested at systemic implementation. I will say, in all fairness, if you want to make a broad impact with analytics, you really have to build it in systemically. And I guess the point of that is you have the opportunity to design systemic approaches such as, you know, if students don't log in for a period of time, then they drop out. Well, you need a way to moderate or to automate that process. How are you going to, you know, who's going to pay for the software, design the software to make contact with students when they're showing signs of dropping out? How are you going to manage that process? I mean, these are all the activities that can only be done at a systems level. Some of the broad scale data analysis as well, and the data shop, which we'll look at again next week, Ryan Baker will likely talk about it. You know, it's a publicly accessible data set that allows people to look at activity of learners within courses, and you can sort of play around with and understand what's the impact of some of these elements of interaction. But if you want to make a big impact educationally, my argument is you need to move beyond analytics at a course level and begin to move into aggregate or institutional level analytics. By the way, this is a quote that I mentioned earlier that gets a little bit to what John was saying about algorithms in terms of what's important with data. It's not about who owns it or even who has access to it, but it's about who has the ability to put that data to work.
Well, risking of talking too much, I will say that of the three readings of this week, there was a page from Tanya Elias' document, page number 9, where she presents a collective application model from Drawn and Anderson, and I find that very simple figure quite important, because my feeling is that if we have information gathering, information processing, information presentation all in the same tool, we can really make this feedback from information presentation to the next information gathering much more effective. So what I want to share here is, in the practical way of getting advantage of a system, I think that this feedback is very important, and I can only see it with an integrated tool.
Well, there's some significant issues that arise. I do think, to some degree, yes, you can get better data and better analysis with an integrated tool, but you also sacrifice something in the process. I had a chat with Shane Dawson, who's one of the developers of Snap, and right now Snap is, we use it next week, by the way, but right now it's a nice tool that allows an educator to do a simple analysis of discussion forum interactions. I'd use the term, it's a lightweight learning analytics tool, and I think it's effective because it's easy to use. So the question becomes, and this is the exact same questions that we have now with learning management systems versus personal learning environments or personal learning networks, and that's, to what degree do you create a sort of a large monolithic tool or to what degree do you create a series of smaller, more single functionality tools that are effectively integrated, which means, you know, you don't have to, let's say, download the entire platform and use the entire platform, but instead the tools communicate nicely with each other, but they don't, they aren't all within the same umbrella. I prefer that sort of loosely joined model personally, simply because I think it's better for innovation. If you have a lot of individual subsets of tools and activities that are being developed, and if they're communicating with each other, then you can make leaps and bounds in one aspect of tool and functionality, and that'll benefit the entire network. But if you have one entire integrated system that sits under one umbrella, then you end up with this sort of the crisis of being a monolithic. That's sort of my concern with it. And then suddenly we end up back to some of the frustrations we have with learning management systems or enterprise resource systems, where they do everything and they normalize all behavior to the standard of the tool, rather than the diversity that's enabled when we have a variety of different tools and we can all kind of play around and do different things. So I would prefer loosely connected. You know, integration points are fine as long as those integration points aren't lock-in integration points.
Well, clearly there are advantages in both situations. One main advantage of having an integrated tool is that we can really have all the data in the same format, so it is much easier to analyze. I think that the future perfect integrated tool has a lot to learn at this point from all those diversified tools, because we are only in the beginning. But I think that in 2 or 5 or 10 years, what enables the best solution will be an integrated tool. I think in the next few weeks, perhaps I will try to set up a discussion forum based only on this subject.
No, and I encourage you to set that up and start that conversation. One of the challenges to be aware of is that managing people and managing learning isn't the same as managing financial resources. I mean, that's an obvious statement. But, you know, just like with, you know, CRMs and ERPs and other systems like this that you know, are enterprise resource and planning systems or resource management systems, you can shuffle dollar bills around and you can shuffle, ordering systems around and those kinds of things. But I believe we're a bit premature to start moving toward an integrated system with learning analytics, simply because people don't avail themselves to the same level of categorization and structured process management that these other systems try to employ. And I do agree with you that we're early in the stage here and we need to sort of let some of these tools and technologies kind of make themselves available. What I mean by that is we need to understand where are we going and what's the ultimate impact of that. So it'd be an interesting discussion to have. I'm quite biased in preferring more distributed, loosely, connected, integrated approaches, because I think it's better for innovation. By the same account, there's a higher cognitive demand, and this is something that, you know, our good friend Steve Jobs understands quite well. You know, he creates very simple, easy to use tools, but he makes a lot of choices on our behalf. One of the things, I just had a brief text to John asking whether he'd be willing to do a presentation on some of his ideas on this. He did a presentation to the Athabasca University and learning services recently, where he looked at the hard and soft attributes of technologies, and I think it's very relevant to the discussion that we're having here. I mean, and actually John's actually written the text on it as well, looking at the constraining elements of choice in the e-learning process. So I think that's important to think about. What do we gain when we eliminate the choices of our end users, and what influence does that have on analytics? So hopefully John will accept an invite to present during this course and we can get a bit more of his thinking on that topic. All right, well, now we have it in writing, so it's confirmed that John will do that presentation. I'm thinking probably week six. I guess it's a matter of John's schedule, but week six is where we're looking at sort of future trends and patterns, but it can certainly happen earlier. Other questions, comments, reactions to week one? Is there anything that's particularly not sitting well at this stage? All right, well, rather than belabor the discussion, let's give it just another minute, and if there aren't any additional questions, then we can start to wrap up our session a bit earlier. Okay, well, I should mention, just to get things straightened out for next week, you're likely familiar with the course outline, but next week we're talking about a topic that's perhaps a little bit more technical, and I think also quite a bit more practical, and we're going to start looking at big data. And in the process, we'll introduce you to a variety of data sets that you can access, particularly the Data Shop. We'll also look at a tool that allow you to analyze the discussions that have been happening so far in the Moodle forum, and we'll continue to flesh out some of the ideas and concepts. I encourage you to download the view tool and start playing around with ideas. As I mentioned, this is how I piece together fairly quickly the week one elements. I'll continue to sort of draw out additional concepts and how they relate eventually as the course progresses. Okay, excellent. So John's confirmed for week six. Let's book that in the schedule. I'll actually make that update on the site right away. So we're shooting for Tuesday on week six, which I believe is, what is that? Is that the 15th? Anyway, I'll follow up with John and post it in the forum. So have a look at this tool, because I encourage you, as John said earlier, from this notion of personal analytics, start looking at the ways in which you see elements connecting. And as it progresses, you know, we're going to flesh out in particular this area here, right? What we're tracking, and unfortunately CMAP, I don't believe can. They're different data formats, but feel free to try and let us know. But this is what we're going to flesh out more so that we build a repertoire of tools and a repertoire of techniques. I think by the end of the course, I would like to be able to have, you know, those active participants to be at a stage where you can look at a course or a course data set, whether it's in Moodle or some other format, and you can analyze that to gain insight into what learners did and what the impact of that was. Which means you might say, oh, I can use, you know, this data mining connection tool, and then we'll take that approach and we'll connect it with this concept here, and we'll use this social network analysis tool, and the list goes on. So we want to be at that stage where any participant in the course can take the data exhaust thrown off by learners, and we'll start to analyze what that means and what the impact is. So basically, we'll have the tools to dissect and understand learner activity and insight that it might gain give for us as educators. Stephen, why not put in the resources? We actually had the syllabus done and developed before we started looking at Moodle. But yeah, Sylvia mentioned there's a link to it, but it's not directly integrated within Moodle. Marcella asked about a crash course in math for analytics. My suggestion whenever people ask a math question, including my kids, is look at the Khan Academy. They have some nice resources. If you're Academy, do I know how to spell? The other option is if you look at O'Reilly. O'Reilly has some nice ebooks, reasonably cheap, that you can download on basics to statistics. Oh yeah, programming collective intelligence. I think that's actually an O'Reilly text as well. You know, basics to statistics. You can also get resources that introduce you to R. R is a free tool that you can download for statistical analysis. And so, yeah, there's an awful lot of resources available. And what I'd encourage you, if you're looking for them, tag them as LAC11 in Delicious or Deagle so others benefit from it. All right, we're going to end 12 minutes early, which is always good. Meetings should be shorter rather than not longer than what they're scheduled. Hope everybody has a great week. Looking forward to diving into week two. Take care.